Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Sorry, I got distracted because I have the Facebook comments open now, so they come in live. It's distracting. Renee says that her dog keeps pawing at her phone. She's either loving the show or trying to make it stop.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Listen, if you're listening to the show with your dog, please let us know how your dog is enjoying or hating the show.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's an old liner, but just good to bring it back to the surface again. Really, it still applies. We get plenty of feedback from human beings. I'd like to get some more dog feedback, please.
Mostly like 9-year-old kids, but that's fine.
Kids love the show. Some adults enjoy the show. Dogs,
still trying to figure out.
We need a more representative sample size.
Yeah. Wallabies love it, though.
Our next guest here will help us understand some of the things going on in the NBA right now because there is so much of it. We'll talk about it all here with Jonathan Von Tobel, senior NBA analyst for VSiN. It's V-S-I-N. You've seen it before, but that's how it's pronounced if you didn't already know. You can hear him on the Hardwood Handicappers podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at MeJVT. Jonathan, thank you for joining us. And are you a dog person?
Yes, I am. You know, I grew up with both, but I think I would skew toward the dog camp if I were to pick a side.
Do you have a dog currently, or do you have like a favorite dog that you've had? The breed, any details we can get will really help us get to know you, I think.
So, well, I mean, throughout my life, there have been many dogs. That sounds terrible, right? Just like going through dogs. But, you know, like a Springer Spaniel, Golden Retriever. I think Toby, the Golden Retriever, who actually just passed this past year, was probably at the top of the list. Toby was a good boy. So I'm a Golden Retriever guy.
Also, Toby is a good dog name. I don't think I've heard a lot of it, but I like that a lot. So, again, really, just I feel like we know you're a Golden Retriever guy. You had a great dog named Toby. This is a good open. I don't know if you can channel any of that energy to make me feel like the Mavs know what they're doing, but that's sort of the segue for today. Is it seems like there is a bit of a mass exodus happening there. It sounds like Luka might not be terribly happy. Mark Cuban is tweeting things about Athletic stories that seem to be sort of foretelling the future in some ways. Do you have any feel of what it's going to look like in Dallas post Rick Carlisle?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you're going to be fine with Luka for the next few years. You know, this whole thing is about how long is Luka going to be there. You know, you saw in his exit press conference when they asked him, are you going to sign the extension? He laughed and he went, what do you think? You know, so he's going to sign on the dotted line. It's just the next few steps. Are you going to get Luka for the next 4 years, or are you going to get him for the next 10 or 12? And that's, I think, what is so important about what is happening with the Dallas Mavericks right now. And what's interesting is, you know, you read that Athletic report that you're referring to that Mark Cuban alleged was total BS, and you see everything going on in the front office. You know, Harlebov Vulgaris, which there's an interesting sports gambling tie, right? Former professional gambler who made his way to the front office of the Dallas Mavericks. Maybe he has his fingers in too many pies over there in the front office, to the point where there was a dust-up reported by Tim McMahon that during the game at one point, Luka yelled at Rick Carlisle, who runs the team, you or Bob. Mm-hmm. And so what I find really interesting is Carlisle's gone, right? Donnie Nelson's gone. But by all accounts, we still have Harlebov in the front office. So if that's like some real tension, you know, Mark Cuban seems to be staying the path of he's going to have his role with this team. Now, things can develop, but it's really important what's going to happen here because the personnel decisions have to be better. Seth Curry for Josh Richardson didn't really work out. The draft picks weren't really great. So these next 2 weeks are all about deciding whether or not you're going to have Luka for the long haul, like a Dirk Nowitzki, or the short term, like another one of these superstars who might find a new home.
You mentioned Dirk. There was a tweet from Mike Vigil on Twitter at the announcement that Dirk was joining the team as a special advisor. And Mike tweeted, this is like when Papa John's hired Shaq. Like, it sort of feels like you're bringing in sort of a welcome, friendly face. It's going to get a little goodwill going to maybe also put out some of the fires from behind the scenes. Do you get that feeling? Because that's sort of the thing. We talked about the Texans a lot with Jack Easterby, and everything sort of fell apart kind of over the course of really a year or so. Do you feel like the Mavs are in some danger there with the head coach and GM spots obviously still kind of up in the air?
Yeah, to a certain extent, right? Like, as long as you have Luka, you're going to be competing for a playoff spot. But the timing is, it seems somewhat hollow with Dirk, right? Like, hey, man, you know, our young superstar who's now over in Lithuania competing with his national team, let's have him as a sort of ambassador. So it kind of feels like, you know, exactly what that move was for the most part, which is interesting, too, because you would think that even not on the payroll, Dirk Nowitzki was probably working a little magic and establishing a relationship with Luka Doncic. But, you know, I find it fascinating from a lot of different reasons, different angles. But you'll think about it, like, Mark Cuban has had a pretty static situation as an owner, right? He's only had, what, I think, two head coaches. Obviously, we know that Nelson's been there for a really long time. So this is a really interesting territory that Cuban enters into because he hasn't had to do this a lot. There hasn't been a lot of turnover for Dallas. And so what you have to do and the decisions you have to make are going to be massive. And people might trust Mark Cuban, but he also hasn't had to make a lot of these decisions, right? So this is going to be some foreign territory for him.
Yeah, you're right. He has had that sort of advantage of stability where it's a little bit easier to keep everything on the track that you're on, and they've been pretty good for the majority of that time. Obviously, they're going to have to figure out some things, but it seems like Rick Carlisle will not have any trouble at all getting a job somewhere else, and right now, Boston is open, New Orleans is open, Washington, Portland, Indiana. I guess there's still a chance in Milwaukee, perhaps, but where do you think Carlisle would make the most sense right now if you had to, if you had to bet on it? Let's just say if you had to bet on it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's probably one of those teams that seems to be on the precipice of making a solid step forward, right? Whether it's the Boston Celtics, who made a pretty solid trade, getting rid of the Kemba Walker contract and opening up a little bit more cap space, shoring their front line a little bit more. You know, whether it's Portland, who seems to have the core that can maybe take a next step forward if they're coached a little bit better, right? If Milwaukee opens up, I think that'd be a brilliant spot for him as well. So I think it would probably be one of those. So if I'm betting on that, it would be a veteran-laden squad that could probably get pushed forward by Carlisle. And at this point, given the jobs that are open, I'd probably lean towards the Boston Celtics. There was a report about a week ago that they wanted, for lack of a better term, a retread, a guy that has been proven, not so much a first-time assistant. And I think that makes a lot of sense of where they're at and where they could be with the right personnel moves and the right head coach.
So it sounds like you like the move that the Celtics made, then sending Kemba to Oklahoma City, Kemba Walker, and this year's first-round pick, future second, for Al Horford, future second, and Moses Brown. They end up being able to move that money and bring back Al Horford. It was kind of, for me, it was sort of a funny piece of news to see today, especially seeing a relatively big trade in the midst of the playoffs still going on. But what did you make of that move for both sides as Boston gets to free up a little bit of space and Oklahoma City, you know, good for them, finally getting a first-round draft pick to work with?
All right. They're so scant. They're very few. So it's going to be crazy. They now have three first-round picks in this upcoming draft. I think you like it as much as you can, like a deal like that, right? Which is obviously like a salary dump and trying to fix things. But I will say, you know, you mentioned Moses Brown, who I think had a really solid year, 8-8, essentially 8-9, if you want to round up those numbers. You address like the key weakness, like two of them, right? One, you were pressed for cap space in terms of the contract that Kemba had, still $72 million owed to him over 3 years. It's insane when you think about it. And then if you look at it from the perspective of your weakness on the court, it was a front court that has been, you know, very thin over the last couple of years. Now you get the veteran, now Horford, you get the young piece as well. So I think, you know, you like it as much as you can, a deal like that. It's obviously not going to make a massive push. You still got to address, I think, the point guard position because you just shipped off your starting point guard. But overall, I think it's a really solid move. And by all accounts, right, Kemba Walker is going to be on the move now. Oklahoma City is going to Chris Paul him in terms of finding a spot that would be work for him and bringing it full circle. One of the first teams that popped up in some of the reports for Kemba Walker before he got traded was Dallas. So maybe the Dallas Mavericks go ahead and acquire him. We'll see if that's going to happen. But it does seem like Kemba Walker is not done moving around here.
We have a relatively eclectic fan base here in Kansas City. Beards, who called you as a Celtics fan, he did a double arms in the air fist pump whenever you said Carlisle to Boston. Rudy in here is a Nuggets fan. I am a Suns fan, so I will take your Chris Paul reference as an excuse to talk about my beloved and apparently now unstoppable Phoenix Suns, except for the fact that Chris Paul is in the COVID protocols now. Especially whenever you're watching the lines change and the odds for teams not only in the next series, but all the way to the championship. How much have you seen those Suns numbers move over the course of the playoffs? And then how are you feeling right now with Chris Paul being a little bit up in the air, although it seems like most of the sentiment there is relatively positive with him being able to hopefully come back after maybe missing a game at this point?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think it was either Adrian Wojnarowski or Brian Windhorst today. You've talked about the fact that if this Clippers series goes seven, there's a very solid chance that he's not even going to miss time. So that'll be a really big positive for him. So No, look, the Suns are, they've been extremely impressive, right? And the thing is, like, we can quibble, like, we do the stupid conversation about asterisks, if you want to put an asterisk on the playoff run, you know, but they have taken care of business against teams that have been banged up in front of them, right? The Lakers lose Anthony Davis, took care of business in a big way. The Denver Nuggets, you know, they're banged up in their backcourt, but they beat the absolute crap out of them over four games. So it's not like they're barely getting by these teams. They're taking care of business in a massive fashion. I think my quibble with Phoenix has always been the depth a little bit. I think in three out of those four games, each one of the reserves posted a minus in terms of their their plus-minus in the box score. You know, you saw that those gaps got closed a little bit in the bench minutes for the Phoenix Suns. So I think that's the worry, if you have one, for Phoenix, is that the depth, I think, is a little shaky at times. But other than that, look, I mean, the numbers right now are going to be a little bit shorter than they should be, only because they're the only team in the Western Conference Finals.
Right.
They're going to be an underdog to either Utah and potentially the Clippers if Kawhi Leonard is going to be back, but all indications are maybe not going to be available. So if you want to bet on a type, the best shot for you is going to be that rolling parlay where you're just betting them series to series. You know, bet on them in the Western Conference Finals and then roll that over into an NBA Finals, whoever that's going to be, because if it's Brooklyn or if it's Milwaukee, if it's Philadelphia, they're going to be an underdog to any one of those teams outside of Atlanta who they'd be favored over. But you have to be impressed, man. And look, I'm a Clippers fan, so we can add to the massive amount of people that are here.
Yes.
But it's cool to see Chris Paul in terms of what the playoff history has been on the verge of potentially getting this done, and the path is wide open for it. So I think anecdotally, I think you got to love what the Phoenix Suns are doing, because the story is absolutely awesome if you're a basketball fan.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it more than I would have even imagined enjoying a deep playoff run after not seeing one for a decade. I do hate now to potentially prod at a sensitive spot for you, but what are you seeing right now with the Clippers? And I mean, you obviously you got the Paul George game without Kawhi, but obviously it's still very far from ideal. As soon as it seemed like maybe they would be able to have the biggest opening in the West, you get that Kawhi news. How is it looking right now for LA?
So I think so one of the cases that I made, and I was really strong on LA in that last game. You know, the market really overreacted. You know, I bet them at 7.5, bet them at 8, and I couldn't go in for thirds because at 8.5 I was like, all right, like, this is getting ridiculous. but like, you know, the Clippers, I think one of the things that the market didn't really realize was they really figured something out schematically in the games in Los Angeles, and I would even argue in the second half of game two, which, remember, they were down by 20-ish points, and they throw at that zone switch all defense, and they cut right back into it, take a lead in the fourth quarter. This small ball lineup really works against the Utah Jazz. It pulls Rudy Gobert out of the painted area. It allows them to attack. They have an offensive rating of 124 in this series against the team that finished first in defensive efficiency. They've been incredible on that end. And on the other side, it's a Jazz team that is predicated on drive and kick opportunities to three-point shooters, and the Jazz have not been able to get within the painted area. The first two games of the series, they averaged 35.5 attempts within 14 feet of the basket, and they've shot over 52% of those games. Games 3 through 5, that's down to 28, and they're shooting 48% on those looks. Like, they're just not getting anything inside the arc because of the way the Clippers have played. So, you know, I was making the argument when Kawhi went down, if we're talking about a title, it's obviously much tougher, and I don't know if they can do that. But if we're talking about winning this series where they have a schematic and a lineup and a personnel advantage, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that they win two games and, you know, beat the Jazz in either 7 or 6, and they're on the verge of doing it. It's in perfect timing because they're back in L.A. for the first time in front of a full-capacity crowd. So I do think they're going to win this series. I think they are going to close this out tonight. Even with Mike Conley back, we have seen this now. Anthony Davis rushes back, team on the verge of elimination. He has to leave because he's not fully healthy. We've seen what James Harden is now. These soft tissue injuries are serious, and you can't rush guys back. So I do wonder what you're getting out of Conley tonight.
So do you know what the line is for tonight, then, off the top of your head for Jazz Clippers?
Yeah, Jazz Clippers right now is, Utah's up to a 2.5-point favorite. 221 is the total.
It'll be incredibly interesting if we get the Clippers-Suns Western Conference Finals that you're looking at there then. And, you know, clearly we will not speak while that is happening. We will not call you again over the course of that series, especially unless it goes really well for Phoenix, unless we get another Suns and Four situation. But I like that matchup quite a bit. On the Eastern Conference side, obviously, as the Sixers and Hawks play right now, the meltdown on Wednesday night was of epic proportions from the Sixers. The whole Eastern Conference feels like it's like a soda bottle that's just been getting shooken more and more up over the course of these last couple of weeks. What was it like in the gambling world watching that game melt down?
No, I mean, it was pretty incredible, right? Especially if you were actually getting involved in this, like from an in-game perspective. I think the highest number I saw in Atlanta was like 16, 17-ish to 1 to win that game the other day. Like, it's been nuts, man. And, like, from a basketball perspective, you know, if, again, kind of tying that back to the whole Clippers thing, you know, Doc Rivers, again, having this issue. And this has been his issue for a while in terms of closing out games. You know, I heard a great stat earlier. There was today with Kevin O'Connor at the Ringer and his podcast. He had it where it was Doc Rivers. The last two seasons are Doc Rivers led teams 11-5 when they have a lead of at least 16 points. 73-3 the rest of the league in those situations. Like that's, it's insane how bad he is, at least in terms of closing games out. And I think you're really seeing just the issues from a personnel standpoint for Philly, right? They have no dynamic pick and roll game. They don't have a point guard that threatens you at all three areas of the floor. Ben Simmons is clearly limited in terms of his offensive game. And Tobias Harris is not a, you know, a ball handler pick and roll type. You know, he's always going to settle for those mid-range jump shots. It's always been his game. And so Steph Curry and now Joel Embiid are your two outlets on offense. And I think big picture-wise, it's going to be a problem. There's a chance they can still pull this out against Atlanta, but when we're talking about a series against, you know, Milwaukee especially, or against Brooklyn, who's got the firepower if Harden's going to be fully healthy, looked a little bit better in the last game, you can't really like their chances.
Do you think that there's going to be something dramatic this offseason for the Clippers, or excuse me, for the Sixers, if they do not end up getting to at least the conference finals?
You know, I tend to say no. I mean, only because, right, like the problems with Ben Simmons, right, because that would be the piece that would move if that was going to be the case, right? You know, that would be gone. Joel Embiid's been absolutely fantastic. But the reason why I tend to think no is, like, everything with Ben Simmons is kind of from, like, a personal standpoint, right? Like, bro, switch your shooting hand when you're shooting free throws. You know, work on adding something else to your game. Like, those are kind of things that Ben Simmons himself can fix and then can stick around in Philadelphia. Like, you see what the 76ers and what all of us to a certain extent liked with Ben Simmons at a time, but it seems just so focused on what Ben wants to do as a player as opposed to his actual shortcomings, right? Like, he can't do that. I think we all know, given his profile, like, if he added, like, a little bit of a push shot or a floater or anything like that, he'd be a really dynamic player. But it all just seems to be built on him wanting to do it. So maybe if he buys into that, the 76ers run this back and they just go, you know, revamp the backcourt with a true point guard and get somebody that can threaten them in that area of the floor. I mean, look how good they were with Jimmy Butler as a ball handler, right? Like, it could work, but I tend to think no. Especially, too, you know, I'm always about buying low and selling high. It's like stocks. You're selling at an all-time low here with Ben Simmons in terms of what you're getting back at a trade.
You also mentioned, obviously, all of the moving parts right now for Brooklyn. We're going to get around the entire NBA with you in one segment. This is incredible. You mentioned, obviously, that they're dealing with Harden coming back, and I don't know what the feel is right now on your side of things in terms of Kyrie maybe being back. The injury looked horrible, and you know, left in a boot, so it doesn't seem like there's a lot of cause for optimism there. But what I mean, the ceiling for a healthy Nets team is infinitely high. I don't know what the ceiling for this version of them is. I don't know what you think the most likely outcome is in that series and for either of those teams who could potentially make the finals and obviously give anybody a real fit.
I think it's fascinating, right? Because so I tend to think that they're going to win game seven. Like, it's not anything strong, but you know, you're back at home. They don't have Milwaukee an answer for Kevin Durant, right? 50% from the floor in the last game. We saw what he did in game five as well. He's incredible. So there's no stopper. PJ Tucker's going to be called the Durant stopper, but it's just not the case. But what I find fascinating is, like, let's say they move on, and let's say Atlanta moves on. Yeah. Remember, Atlanta beat them twice in Brooklyn early in the season. You know, they offer some matchups that I think would kind of be a problem for Brooklyn. I would be fascinated by, like, an Atlanta-Brooklyn series and how much fun that would potentially be between these two, because I don't know if they're stopping each other. So, like, what that would be in an Eastern Conference Finals would be nuts. But if you're telling me that Harden is fully healthy and Kevin Durant obviously looks very fully healthy and even Kyrie's not going to come back, I tend to think that this team is, if they move on from Milwaukee, still going to win that Eastern Conference Finals series, whether it's Atlanta, whether it's Philadelphia, and still are going to be the team to beat in the NBA Finals. I'll be very clear. I'm a massive Harden stan. When he was at the peak of his powers this year, I was pushing for him for MVP because he was so incredible. He makes a massive difference with what he can do on offense. I mean, look at his presence in Game 5, altered everything for Milwaukee. He was on one leg, and they didn't want to go at him, and they were still defending him very tightly. So I think if he can progressively get healthier, I still think Brooklyn is the best team in the Eastern Conference.
There's so much talent between it. Literally any of their two out of their three stars. It's unbelievable that they could lose Kyrie and be the favorite still.
And I think, you know, what we overreact to, like the market really overreacted to the loss for Harden for injury, right? In game two, the Nets were like a 1.5-point underdog, 2-point underdog at home. They've been playing with two out of the three all year long, right? So it's not like if they lose any one of the two, it's like, oh my God, how is this going to work? The complaint about them was that they weren't playing together. But then all of a sudden, the betting market was like, whoa, man, they're not complete. Like, no, like this is what they've been doing all season long. Like, they can overcome this.
So with that, you've almost certainly answered this implicitly somewhere, but is there one place right now in the market where you look at that and you say, right here is an overreaction that people should be capitalizing on, or maybe an underreaction that I think people should be reacting to harder? Is that somewhere with Brooklyn? Where is that in the playoffs right now?
So it's situationally, and I actually just wrote about this for our magazine today. You know, there's a very popular trend where teams in series, and we'll see if this manifests itself in the next few series that we're going to see, but teams in series that lose the first two games and then come back home for game three, down 2-0 going back home for a really long time, that was an insanely strong trend, right? I think even going back to 2015, 2016, heading into this postseason, we're talking somewhere in the range of like 23-9, like a really strong trend, first quarter, first half, that you bet on the team down 2-0 going back home. The problem is the books have really caught up. And you get a lot of these instances where you're laying numbers that are equivalent to the game in the first half. So for you as a bettor, there's really no value in numbers like that. We've had five instances this season alone in the postseason of teams down 2-0 going back home, and it's 2-3 up to this point. So not only this year has it lost in terms of that 2-3 record, but you're also buying into some massive numbers. Denver's a good example. You know, Phoenix and Denver played. Denver goes back home down 2-0. They're a 1.5-point favorite for the game. They're a 2.5, 3-point favorite for the first half. Like, that's a mess. Like, there's no value in a number like that. So I would say that's the opportunity you want to look for. If we get another one of these series where a team loses the first two and goes back home, there's been some really good value in this postseason betting against that trend because you're getting some really inflated numbers on the other side.
Jonathan, we'll let you go. Thank you for making the time you did for us tonight. That was, I feel like I've learned some things. I feel informed, energized for a few more basketball games throughout these remaining series. And I imagine we'll talk to you again before too terribly long.
Beth, thanks for having me, guys. I always appreciate it.
Great stuff there from Jonathan Von Tobel. You can follow him on Twitter at MeJVT, M-E-J-V-T, and you can see his work on VSiN. You can also hear him on the Hardwood Handicappers podcast. And if you go to VSiN.com, VSIN.com, and if you go to VSIN.com/newsletter, you can get their free daily sports betting email. And if you're interested in betting on basketball, after exactly one conversation, I feel like I'm going to have a pretty hard time sending you in a better direction than towards Jonathan there. And we only brought up the fact that the Suns swept the Nuggets, I think, twice.
Sorry, I blacked out. What happened?
We had a good segment. Oh, you know, you were blacked out for it, which might, correlation, causation, who's to say? Were you blacked out for the whole segment or just my question there, what you say?
Just any time I heard Suns,
yeah.
My brain, like when I hear the word Suns, I can say it, but if somebody else says the word Suns, basically, for the next 60 seconds, it's just nothing.
Rudy's just seeing Chris Paul pick and rolls with Jokic and MPJ just in his head, and it's just nightmare fuel.
Last commercial
center
break.
Centerfield's playing in the background.
sorry, guys. Blacked out. What happened?
Last commercial break, Rudy was talking about Michael Porter Jr.'s next contract, and I was going through the notes before we talked to Jonathan, and Beard said, every time I turn on Rudy's mic during a commercial, it's just always Nuggets, Nuggets, Nuggets. And Beard, I think what you've learned is that whenever the next time he's like, and what if they wanted to trade for Zion? You just go, Suns!
Chris Paul!
Poof! Disappeared for 60 seconds. How excited would Rick Carlisle of Boston make you, Pierce?
Oh, my gosh.
Can you say it in a safer radio way?
I've got a joke, but I'm not going to make it.
So this is my like semi-serious
not gonna make it.
NBA thing real quick.
Not going to do it.
Rick Carlisle is a hard ass.
I'm doing
and,
it.
And hates two things, young players and point guards.
Not going to do it.
They have young players. They have a young point guard. Now that's Peyton Pritchard or Marcus Smart. I don't know what they're going to do there. But anyway, I love Rick Carlisle.
What are the two things he hates? Say it again for me.
Young basketball players and point guards.
Okay. I combined the two to young point guards.
At
that point, he just sees red. He just sees fully red at that point.
So let's see. Jason Tatum.
How old is he?
He's only 19.
Jason Tatum is 23.
Pretty young, Beards.
Pretty young.
It is young.
It's pretty young, Beards. You sure you want that?
Jaylen Brown.
He's also exceptional.
How old is Jaylen Brown?
Like 24?
24.
You sure, Beards?
Yes.
All right. You want your coach to come in and immediately
Robert
hate.
Williams.
You know who he'll love?
He's at a point guard. It doesn't matter.
You know who he'll love? Al Horford.
Yeah.
Because he's big and old.
Marcus Smart. Well, he'll half
Robert
like
Williams
Smart.
Is 23. Huh.
Let's go ahead and take a break. Whenever we come back, Beards, I would like to actually get your thoughts on the trade the Celtics made today. I've got another total nonsense story that I think will be good for a little reprieve. And some point during the break, Beards is going to say the code word to Rudy as he's blasting out takes about his Nuggets. So we'll talk about some more basketball things and some total utter nonsense.
Taco Falls 25.
Whenever we come back. Summer's coming and hotter days are here. Keep cool with the help of our friends at Manscaped, who just launched their fourth generation performance package, which includes the Lawnmower 4.0.
No way.
4.0? You heard that right. The 4.0.
No way.
Compliment your summer grooming routine with a trim from the leaders in male grooming. The sun is shining and calling your name, fellas. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Three of them are right here. And get ready for summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST.
And did Josh mention this trimmer is waterproof too?
4.0!
In the shower or under the sun, the Lawnmower 4.0 is the best trimmer for you.
Seal the deal with Manscaped's liquid formulations. Before heading outside, use Crop Preserver down under deodorant to keep you on your game in the heat. After a long day of trimming the lawn and whacking the weeds in the summer heat, boost your freshness with the Crop Reviver.
Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers, which I kid you not, am wearing right now.
4.0.
The Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST at manscaped.com. Stay fresh this summer and shine with Manscaped.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I think that... Boring you, Beards?
Sorry. Had a yawn.
Yeah, we heard.
You can. There's a little off button.
No. Yeah.
There's not a yawn button. There's a cough button, but there's not a yawn button.
There's an off button.
On your mic.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Anyway, so Doug Marrone, you're supposed to yawn again, Beards. Now we go live to Beards for his NBA season preview. Beards, go!
Timberwolves might not make the playoffs this season, guys.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Handful of NBA things here. Also, thanks to Ice Pyro for the subscription on Twitch. You can watch the show. In addition to just listening to it, you can watch it. Twitch.tv/SportsRadio810. You can go to the 810 Facebook and YouTube pages as well if you want to watch and comment along. Beards, let's go first with the trade that your Boston Celtics made today. Just because it's kind of funny to me. They let Al Horford walk.
It's kind of funny.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah, here's
no,
the thing.
It is.
I think it's probably, I haven't, dived into a bunch. Seems like the right decision in terms of
it's not
freeing
dumb,
up money.
But it's kind of funny.
But it's just, I sent that tweet in the chat where it's basically, they thought Al Horford was too much money, so they went out and gave Kimball Walker more money to trade for Al Horford, who is making the same amount of money that they just could have paid him.
Yeah, and, again, and it cost him a first-round pick.
Yeah, and again, it's fine. 16th overall pick, many times that guy is a G League player.
Yep.
All happens
it's
all
not
the time.
It's not a top five pick. It's not the equivalent of the 16th pick in the NFL draft.
This is just how basketball works.
Sure.
It's really not. We say lottery pick just to expand it a little bit.
Or they're just a guy on the bench.
Yeah.
But frequently it's even top five, right? Any pick out of the top five is a lot of times luck, unless it's a guy who is talented who just dropped because of injury, like Michael Porter Jr.
The 16th pick might end up being essentially Moses Brown.
Yeah.
Who know? Who ended up going to
I think
the
Boston's
results.
Pick last year was about 16 or whatever, and it was Aaron Nesmith, who for half the year was clueless.
His grandpa invented basketball.
Yeah. For the first half of the year was clueless, and then suddenly discovered himself, and he's going to be a great 7th or 8th man for a couple of years.
He's going to
be figured out what to do on the basketball court.
He's going to be a great 7th or 8th man for a couple years.
Right, but that's the point that we're making.
It's just funny.
And he discovered himself. He'll be a seventh or eighth man.
Yeah.
I feel like it's probably what you should say.
Great's a strong word, but,
But so the Celtics, to try to boil it down a little bit here first. So the Celtics send Kimball Walker, who they gave a bunch of money to, who was a great player and has bad knees, right?
Yes.
Close enough? I guess has been pretty good whenever he's actually played still, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just bad knees.
For yes. Sure.
Kimball Walker and the 16th overall pick in this year's draft, and then a future second, and they're getting a future second back. Don't worry about those.
Nothing.
They get Moses Brown. Moses Malone would be interesting.
Oh my god! If we got Moses Malone.
16th overall pick this recent year, Isaiah Stewart.
Are you asking me who he plays for?
Do you even know?
Not a clue. Not a clue.
Exactly.
He's a Piston.
He was drafted by the Trailblazers, but he's not on the Trailblazers.
Because he's a Piston.
He was traded to Detroit via Houston.
Yep.
Via Houston.
So it's essentially Kimball Walker and a first for Al Horford. Al Horford was a Celtic. They let him walk. He went and got a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. They paid Kimba a bunch of money. Now they're basically trying to get Kimba Walker's contract off their books. Yeah. And the first round pick is partially, hey, Oklahoma City, please deal with Kimba's money. And also we will get Al Horford back, who's also making – is it fair to say that he's overpaid for his current value?
Okay. Yes.
So they are getting a less overpaid player who will be able to play hopefully more and have more of an impact than Kimba did. Yeah, fair?
2019,
or is this a wash? Is this just money?
16th overall pick in 2019.
Finish that word,
Beards. Horford. Kiki.
Horford.
You can't listen, Rudy. You just can't.
Age well better than Kemba's knees will. I'll put it that way.
Okay,
I think Horford's already aged, Beards.
Horford's 35. That man is old.
He is aged.
Second, Rudy, he's got to be really careful. You know, I don't want to berate you or anything, but please don't interrupt Beards partway through the word Horford.
16th overall pick in 2018. Zaire Smith, Phoenix Suns.
Maybe more importantly.
From Miami, traded to Philadelphia.
And he's not played, I think, since last year.
Just try not to jump in.
So who?
During the...
What was the trade again?
Please just don't interrupt.
What word?
Partway through the word.
So in 20...
Horford.
17. 16th overall pick. Chicago Bulls traded to Minnesota. Justin Patton.
Beards, what did you think about the trade?
About which one?
Doing this until I find a player.
From the Celtics just made.
I like Kemba. I've liked him since he was at UConn, so it kind of stinks. He was a good player when he was healthy, but it's just he hasn't been healthy. In the playoffs, his knees were an issue, and like last year, he wasn't healthy during the bubble and stuff, and Toronto just abused him. They just did that like little box and one defense, and it just basically took him out of it. I liked Horford
in 2016.
I liked Horford when
Boston
he was
Celtics
here.
Drafted Kershawn Yabusele.
Just call him Al. Just call him Big Al from this point forward.
Big Al. I liked Big Al when he was a Celtic. I'm glad they didn't pay him that money at the time. And also, I think that was the thing where he wanted out, too. It was less of Boston letting him walk and more just Horford deciding to leave.
Big Al.
There we go.
Who the Celtics also had the 16th overall pick in 2015. The Celtics have had the 16th overall pick in 15, 16, and 21, but they traded.
Who were the 15 and 16 picks?
Mediocre franchise.
2015 was Scary Terry.
Hey, he was pretty good.
2016 was, let me go back. Although I hated it. Say this name. Gershon Yabusele.
Oh, Yabusele?
Yeah.
He's not around anymore.
No.
Did he die?
No, he's just not on the Celtics, and I don't think he's in the NBA.
Okay.
You know who was also drafted in the 2015 draft?
Just
NBA Finals MVP. And USA Today's most valuable, or USA Today, USA men's basketball team most valuable player, Devin Booker.
I said Devin Booker, but you okay? I said death, and then you started saying a bunch of things. You're looking into the near future, which is great.
This doesn't matter, but I just gotta say, 2015 draft, 13th overall, Devin Booker, 14th overall, Cameron Payne, 15th overall, Kelly Oubre Jr.
Ugh.
There is some Suns legends right there.
The only thing about this
was
Suns...
Was Frank Kaminsky in that draft, too?
9th overall, Frank Kaminsky.
The only thing about this Suns season that has not been quite right for me is I just wish Kelly Oubre had a very minimal role on the team somewhere.
Yeah.
Where's Alex Len when you need him?
Far away, which is exactly where I need him So, kind of a weird trade for Boston. Kind of funny, but not necessarily bad.
Yeah.
Not a great sign. Also, kind of interesting for that to be the first thing that Brad Stevens sort of seems to have orchestrated.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting.
Because he was coaching Kimba
Big Al will be better than Tristan Thompson was. Thompson was fine, but Big Al's game fits better in the modern NBA than Tristan's does. And they had issues at center since they traded... Daniel Tice, was good.
Does Big Al have to forego Social Security? Like, does he get that while he plays, or?
I mean, he was playing in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, does he get his Social Security, though?
I would assume so.
Is there a joke that I'm not getting?
Because he's old.
He's old.
I got it. Pretty freaking funny, guys.
Thank you.
16th overall pick in 2014, Yusuf Nurkic.
Beard, say the thing that... Okay, Rudy, close your Wikipedia draft tab.
I was honestly just going back to find, like, the first player who was, like, drafted 16th who was, like, good. 2014 was the last player draft. Well, no, 2015, because Scary Terry is a good NBA player. Fine NBA player.
Yeah.
Spooky, though.
He is very spooky.
So, Beards, propose the question that
I gotta say, one more. 2013 Boston Celtics drafted Lucas Nogueira.
They had it in 13.
They
also?
Had it also in 13.
Wait a second. Hold on.
All you guys have are the 16th overall pick. Now, you traded them to Atlanta via Dallas.
Again, mediocre franchise.
Yeah,
but, like, this, like, all you have, you always have the 16th overall pick,
Your
Beards.
Bebe Nogueira.
What?
That was his nickname.
Royce White in 2012.
Oh.
Iowa State.
Beards, ask the question you asked me earlier, or phrase it the way that you did. We'll see what Rudy's reaction is, and then I have a few things I want to talk about.
I was playing the game in my head earlier of how many teams, if you gave their president of basketball operations truth serum and just asked them this yes or no question, how many of them would say yes, and I posited it was a very high number.
No.
How many of these teams would fire their head coach to replace them with Rick Carlisle? And I said it was like all but maybe four.
I think that number is way too high.
Yeah, but...
And let's say, instead of truth serum, let's say Rick Carlisle went to them and said, I want to be your head coach.
Yes.
Fire your coach and hire me. How many of them would do it?
I think the only ones that wouldn't are the Spurs and Popovich, Nick Nurse, Spoelstra, and maybe Steve Nash, only because it's his first year.
You're going to get some real homerific stuff here from Rudy and I, but I think here's where I think this list is too short. Go ahead and say your Nuggets thing.
I'm not even saying Nuggets.
Oh, really?
Golden State's not firing Steve Kerr.
No way.
It's not happening.
No chance. Do you know who has the highest? This is not an answer to this question, Beard, because I actually think that this is one that is in your correct column. Do you know who has the highest winning percentage, I think regular season winning percentage, in the NBA among current head coaches? 76ers would have
fired Doc Rivers.
With their active...
It's not for that.
Like... current win percentage.
We'll see how this series goes. Maybe
Kerr's probably pretty high up there. The other one I'd say is maybe Popovich, just because he's played for so long and had so many teams that were 60 wins.
Hold on, I'm trying to figure it. Hold on. Now I've bleeped up because I don't have enough.
So
I've got two columns. I don't know what they each are.
So okay, so
current and career. I guess it's current team. Maybe they're saying
Golden State's not firing Steve Kerr.
Okay,
it's Mike Budenholzer. Mike Budenholzer has a great record with the Bucks. Okay, we can move on to back to the game.
Utah's not firing Quinn Snyder.
I would disagree on that.
I would bet my life savings, which is very little.
Just in terms
they would
of
not
coaching
fire Quinn
ability,
Snyder. They would not fire Quinn Snyder. They love Quinn Snyder. They
but
would
it's got
not
to,
fire
it,
Quinn
I, part of it is it, the, yeah. My main argument against your
I'm not,
number.
I'm not
Beards.
Saying Quinn Snyder is a better coach. Even though I would take Quinn Snyder over Carlisle, but I'm not necessarily. But like, it's not necessarily about that. They would not fire Quinn Snyder today for Rick Carlisle.
My argument against your number Beards is not. Is this coach better than this coach? But is that inertia matters in the front offices?
I'm just doing it based on is this coach better. That's the only argument that I'm doing this on.
Okay, well I'm at six pretty easy because again I think Quinn Snyder's a better coach than Rick Carlisle right now.
But so
I think you look at his teams the last just 3 years proves that.
I think, and this is where I'll make my homerific argument. If the Suns fired the coach that got them to the conference finals, mm-hmm. maybe the finals after this season, to hire Rick Carlisle. Arizona's already on fire all the time, but it would be even more on fire. And I would understand because you seem to have the chemistry there. It's why you mentioned Beards, maybe not Steve Nash. Steve Nash is not a better NBA head coach right now than Rick Carlisle is by a bunch of metrics.
But it's also his first year, and he was an excellent point guard.
Right, but the reason that he got that job is for the vibes. He's a vibes coach. Mm-hmm. Same for Frank Vogel, right? I think we probably think Rick Carlisle is a better basketball coach than Frank Vogel, but he's got the LeBron approval, so he's not getting fired. So I don't think Monty Williams would. And then I can get down to... I think you could make the argument for Tom Thibodeau. He just won Coach of the Year, and the Knicks are happy with where they're at. I really think you're overvaluing, you're undervaluing... keeping the guy and not restarting that element
again,
of your
I'm
team.
I'm just doing this on
coaching. Rick Carlisle.
I'm not worried about.
Yeah, Rick Carlisle is a better coach than Thibodeau. But
I think you phrased the question wrong. Yeah, you phrased the question wrong. You said if you gave him truth serum, who would you fire? Would you fire your current guy? And I don't think the Suns would fire Monty Williams. Just as my best, my most educated example.
If you gave James Jones truth serum, he is not firing Monty Williams.
Yeah, I don't think he would.
Not for Rick Carlisle at least. Maybe for. Popovich. Well, I mean, I don't even know that because Popovich is getting old, but like maybe for Doc.
Probably could have fired him for Steve Nash if he wanted to. Yeah, didn't. Wasn't going to.
Maybe for
not
Steve,
gonna.
But yeah.
I don't know that means that Monty Williams is a top three or top five coach, but I do think it means the organization is
He's
happy
the coach
where they're
that
at.
Has a good relationship with Chris Paul.
But if you're telling me
and a very young team around Chris Paul.
Sure.
Coaches who are definitely better than Rick Carlisle, at least in my mind, it's Steve Kerr.
I think Kerr's really good, but I think he also had the benefit of playing with Draymond and Steph and Kevin Durant.
That's a hell of a team he played with. Well, but that's part of the NBA. Like, right? Like Phil Jackson's considered the greatest of all time, but like
that's right.
He only ever had Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's part of it.
Because also managing that is a legit. You can look at every team LeBron has played for.
And that's part of it.
That is a trait.
Yeah.
Like, that will be the thing that
Phil
has
Jackson's
Steve Nash
greatest trait was there. Managing teams that had Kobe Bryant. Michael Jordan, and it's an incredible trait because, like, especially not even dealing with Michael Jordan when he was the Bulls coach, but like he dealt with essentially Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan always were a little bit at edge. I forget what series it was where Scottie Pippen basically had a concussion. Was like, hey, I can't see right now, I can't play. Jordan never really liked Pippen much after that, and then of course Rodman just like disappeared for a week when he was supposed to be gone for like 48 hours. That's impressive. To deal with that, that's impressive.
Beards is our resident NBA head. I would like you to answer some questions for me.
Okay.
Minor pop.
Okay, Rudy, don't say anything else out loud right now. You've got the list, though. You're not looking at a list of coaches, are you,
no.
Beards?
Hold on. Let me click away.
Just keep.
I was just clicking
keep
away
your
from
eyes,
it.
Keep your eyes over here.
Real fast, I want to get Beards. I'm going to get Beards one thing, and then I'll let you go do this. I'm just looking at current NBA head coaches.
Thank you for your permission.
I would put Rick Carlisle fifth behind Kerr.
Monty Williams.
Doc.
Michael Malone.
Popovich.
Behind Doc?
Yeah, Doc Rivers, I would say. Or wait, hold, let me make sure. I'm pretty sure I had Doc as that. Because like, I think Doc Rivers
I think Carlisle's better.
He won you a title, Beard.
Doing with Rick Carlisle? When was the last team? Does he have one title, too?
Yes, he won 2011. He was the Mavs coach.
That was a decade ago.
Rick Carlisle has not been out of the first round of the playoffs since 2010-11.
Like, and I understand that he hasn't had the NBA's
they've
best talent
a,
around
had a
him.
A bad roster built around that team for a while now. And he has managed to scrape the barrel and get excellent offenses out of those teams.
I mean, in 2013 and 2014, they won 49 and 50 games.
And they were
the
eighth seed.
And he lost in the first round. Well, you know what? Western Conference.
To the Spurs that won the championship.
I'll give you. It's the Western Conference. I'll give you that.
Took him to seven that year, and they were the only competition that the Spurs had that year in the playoffs.
He's coached good teams in a tough conference, but I don't feel like he ends up in some upper echelon by default. I think that's kind of wild.
I mean, since he's with Dallas, only twice has he gotten out of the first round. Lost in the conference semifinals, won an NBA title.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. And then the year after they won the title, like half their team
lost
left
the first
because
round.
They didn't re-sign
they
Tyson
swept.
Chandler, who ended up going to the Defensive Player of the Year award after that.
Since they won the title, they got swept in 2011, missed it in 2012. Lost in 7 in 2013, lost in 5 in 2014, lost in 5 in 2015. Missed the playoffs, lost in 6, and then lost in 7.
Beards, can you play some music for me? Like, do you have an original creation or anything?
Yes.
He's a good coach.
Beards, you're our NBA expert.
Okay.
Everyone knows this.
I would also say best available coach for Boston. Most proven, for sure.
Beards, you know everything about the NBA. Correct?
Nah.
First question. Who is the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets? And this is not me
Michael
throwing
Jordan.
You under a bus, by the way, because these are all answers that I would not have. They're all questions I did not have the answer to without the answers in
is
front
of me. Is it Borrego?
Damn, that's impressive.
James Borrego.
I want to say one quick thing. I would take Michael Malone. Rick Carlisle is a more accomplished coach.
Beards, I will Venmo you right now.
I'm done.
$5 for your work on this.
Okay.
I'm done.
Scrub back through this segment and just find out how many times Rudy said one more thing.
I'm done.
This is not a binding offer.
No,
I'm not going to send you any money.
I'm done.
Damn. Who is the head coach of the Houston Rockets?
Steven Silas.
apparently he's the son of Paul Silas, as I was telling Rudy during the break. I know who Paul Silas is. I did not know his son, his name was Stephen, and I did not know he was coaching the Houston Rockets. Who is the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves? He was hired in February.
They got rid of Flip Saunders' son, and it's one of
Flop
the
was his name.
It was one of the assistants, but I do not I do not remember his name.
Chris Finch.
There we go.
Who is the head coach, Beards McFly?
Mm-hmm.
Resident NBA expert of the Oklahoma City Thunder. He's been there since November 2020. He's been there for almost a full year. I don't know if I've ever seen this name in my entire life.
It's not Billy Donovan because Billy Donovan left and went to Chicago.
Correct.
Bonus points.
I actually know this name, but it's only because of somebody who I follow on Twitter who just tweets about the Thunder all the time.
I do not remember.
His first name is Mark.
I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
I don't know.
That is your hint. Is that his last... Deanult?
He's the current youngest active head coach in the NBA.
Deanult?
Dano?
I don't know.
I think it's Dano.
Dano?
I think it's Dano.
He's 35. He is the same age as Al Horford! He's younger than Chris Paul.
It is Dag Nolt.
The head, hold on.
Listen, I haven't been paying attention to Oklahoma City basketball at all this year.
Dude, the head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder is a year younger than their point guard last year.
Yep.
What?
He coached with Billy Donovan. He was assistant for Billy Donovan in Florida.
Beards, what is the G League Oklahoma City team name?
The Oklahoma City Blue.
Who's the head coach of them?
It's a stupid team name, and it's stupider that you knew the answer to it. You knew the answer. You had that ready to go. I'll give you credit for that one. All right. Your expert status is untouched, Beards. We will sing your praises now and forever.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
And if you'd like to read this story, you can go to goal.com/en-us/news/penis-biting-player-band-4-years-over-act-of.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
One more story I want to talk about before we bring in Mick Schaefer of 41 Action News. Lee Sanderlin is a man who lost his fantasy football league, and as a punishment for coming in last place, he had the following punishment to pay. Spend 24 hours in a Waffle House, but for every full waffle that you eat, 1 hour comes off the clock. So you sit down, you eat a waffle, now you're at 23 hours to go, but you can just wait an hour, now you're at 22, eat another waffle, you're at 21, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he ended up being there. I believe he ended up eating 6 waffles over the course of his time there.
Nine, I believe.
Was it 9?
Yeah, I believe it was 9 waffles, but he was in there for 15 hours.
15 hours, 9 waffles, 1 barf, I know for sure. With that being said, where do you guys think you would end up here? These are Waffle House waffles. They're about the size of the plate, but they're not very thick. They don't look terribly crispy either, which I think would get pretty old, but... If your plan was to be there, I want to start with Beards. If your plan was to be there for 24 hours, but you could take hours off for eating waffles, what would your strategy be?
I'm eating about 4 waffles because I'm not trying to throw up. I'm going to get hungry every once in a while, and then I'm just going to tank the rest of it.
So if you ate 5 waffles, you think you'd throw up?
Over the course of 19 hours.
No, just
but
like
I'm not
off
trying
the
to
bat.
Push myself is the but, thing.
And he's not eating 4 hours. He's not eating 4 at the beginning either. He's going to have a waffle and then another waffle in like 4 hours and another waffle in like 4 hours.
Yeah.
He's going to have a waffle in 4 hours, basically.
We'll
What's your strategy,
we'll see
Rudy?
How I'm doing later on.
And you think that would make you feel sick if you did more?
I just don't want to go
Beards,
crazy.
You have the tummy of a 2-year-old or of a 2-month-old.
Tummy of a 2-year-old is pretty funny.
I like waffles.
What's your strategy, Rudy?
Yeah, but I could eat 4 waffles in an hour and like... I'd feel full, but I'm not feeling sick.
These are big.
Yeah,
I think if you ate if you sat down and ate 4 of these, I think you would feel sick.
I don't think I'd feel sick. I'd feel full. I don't think I'd feel sick.
If you had a stack of 4 of
these are not
what's
that,
your strategy?
These aren't. Oh, I could eat 2 an hour easy. I can knock out 2. I can knock out 2 in essentially, I think, 10 minutes. Take 50 minutes to a full hour off. Eat 2. Again, I'm not feeling good.
So how long is that taking you then?
So what is that? So, like, again, if I mean 2 an hour, that's basically 3.
Here's my math. I think I could eat one an hour, basically with that strategy.
8 hours.
Maybe I could eat two at the very beginning and then one an hour, but I feel pretty confident. Maybe give me an hour off. I'm in and out in 12 hours, 12 waffles. That's my split.
So I could do two an hour. I'd be out in 8 hours. I'm not feeling good at the end of it, right?
16 waffles. That's 16 waffles.
Yeah. I'm not feeling good.
In 8 hours.
I'm not feeling good, but I'm out of there in 8 hours. And like that's kind of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get out of there fast.
I'm going 12-12. You're going 16-8. Beards is going 20-4.
I'm there for the experience.
Are you going... 8-16.
No, Beards, you would be so... You
can do that already!
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.